Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Welcome to a new edition of The Payoff. I'm Tom. I'm with Jeff, your fearless co-host. But first, Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
Happy, at this point, it's a happy post-Halloween for everyone, whatever, you know, whatever people did, whatever Halloween looked like for everybody, but laid low, you know, had good times myself, you know, I'm doing well, you know, to brisk and, you know, crisp in the air, you know, all that good stuff, so, you know, it's doing good, doing all right. How about you? Well,
if it turns out that this, like, current normal is the way things are forever, then someday, you know, like, people are going to be, wait, you psychopaths went to strangers' homes, you accepted food from them that they touched and you were near them, and yep, you did that at 300 homes? Yeah, you know, so I don't know. Yeah.
What kind of, because I am a post-Halloween, before Thanksgiving Christmas decorator. Are you already in that mindset too, or not yet?
We do Christmas decorations right after Thanksgiving.
Okay. Yeah. We talk about it sometimes, like our shoot jobs, we travel sometimes. And so I get to enjoy it a little bit longer. I put the tree up.
Travel's done. We're never traveling again.
Yeah, I'd say normally. Yeah. In our normal shoot jobs. So, yeah, that ain't happening anymore, but, yeah, that's all right. So, hey, to each their own, that's good stuff, but I'm ready. This is 'tis the season for Hell in a Cell. So I'm excited.
Yeah, you know, this, I tell you, we were talking about Hell in the Cell matches to cover. Obviously, we covered probably my still all-time favorite in a lot of ways of the Heartbreak Kid and The Undertaker. But this one, you know, I don't remember anything specifically from it, but I just remember it being an awesome, like, great, great, great match. Remember, Brock is still super young. So it's not like he had, you know, a bunch of classics at this point. So, you know, arguably this is the best match he had in his career up to this point. I remember it being awesome. So I'm super excited to watch it, to cover it, to talk young Brock, to talk Big Evil. There's a lot going on here. These two have obviously crossed paths at different times in their career, but we find Brock looking young and spry, whole different look, looks younger.
Undertaker too. Yeah.
The short hair, the Big Evil. I mean, so it's really interesting. But again, I remember this being a great match. You're the one that chose it, so I'm more curious what you have to say. But from my perspective, when you put this on our list, I'm like, hell yeah, because I remember it was good. And who doesn't love a good 25-minute just ass-kicking Hell in the Cell, probably bloodbath, I'd assume. So I'm excited. Yeah. But what about you? Why'd you put it on the list?
I'm in the same boat as you. It's weird too, because, like, you know, Brock gets shit on a lot, you know, it's, you know, armchair marks and things like that. But, you know, a lot of times if you look over the longevity of his career, like, you know, it makes sense to me. And so for this one too, like, I did, like, you know, want to go back and kind of check out, like you called it, like, young Brock. It's almost weird to see him now and to think, like, he's had a 20-ish, you know, plus almost 20
18 years ago.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's been wrestling and stuff like that for that long, which seems crazy. Like, you know, we've been, you know, our wrestling or his career can buy cigarettes in some states now, like, you know, or, you know, it's just crazy. So between that and kind of going back, and we've talked a lot about, you know, Undertaker as Undertaker, we have not talked about as much Undertaker in the not quite the badass, but you said, like, the Big Evil, kind of the different personas he's had, because, you know, there's a lot of meat on that bone as well too. And it was interesting for sure to discuss that. And then it just kind of worked because, as we all know, Hell in a Cell was recently, just last week. And so to do a match like this in a Hell in a Cell, it just kind of makes sense to tag that on. Like, you know, we're trying to do some timeline stuff here. It kind of coincides with all that. So I got a lot of different reasons for doing this one. I'm excited though to talk about this and just, you know, it's not Brock like we kind of knew, but he is kind of establishing himself at this point. And then, like you said, like Big Evil, like, coming to the ring. It's exciting to talk about that. So yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're ready, man. Let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right. So we're in North Little Rock, Arkansas at the Alltel Arena. Jeff, have you ever been to Little Rock before?
I cannot say. I also have not done like the airport stop. So I can't even claim that I've had a layover there. So how about you?
I will tell you, and I'm not being sarcastic, I'm dead serious. Little Rock is one of the surprisingly cool cities that I've ever been to.
Okay.
You got the airport like kind of right there, and then not far is downtown Little Rock, or whatever they refer to it as. It's this like awesome strip of bars and restaurants on like a river. And so there's some really cool kind of like river seating. At the very end of this street is where they built the Clinton Presidential Library.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've been to probably, I think, four presidential libraries now. I'd like to hit all of them, or as many of them they're out there and worth seeing. So that's right by the airport, right by the downtown. That's really cool. And then it can't be more than, I mean, I could be completely wrong, but it didn't feel like more than about 45 minutes or an hour away is Fayetteville, which is University of Arkansas, which is an awesome college town. So just a pleasantly, surprisingly awesome little town setup area. Really, really liked it. So I don't know where North Little Rock is. I would assume it's north of the city, but I'd assume it can't be too far away. So the attendance, 10,000, sellout crowd. This was October 20th, 2002. My God, Jeff, this was my freshman year of college, because I graduated high school in 2002. So freshman year of college, I'm like, you know, in a single room at the far end of campus by myself. You probably couldn't even bootleg watch wrestling. So I probably didn't see this one live, but I know I've seen this match before, although I don't remember it. So looking forward to digging into this one. 300,000 on the buy rate. So did a pretty good buy rate for, you know, a quote unquote B show. Hell in a Cell probably really helps. I don't know how much you've looked at this card, but it was an interesting card. So the tag team of Chris Jericho and Christian, who are your world tag team champions, defeated Booker T and Goldust. The what was their tag team called?
Oh, I forget.
Booker T and Goldust. I can't remember. It wasn't like Book Dust, was it?
I don't remember.
But they were kind of a fun tag team. So Tori Wilson defeating Dawn Marie in a 4-minute women's match. Then here's a match I wasn't expecting to see. RVD defeating Ric Flair in an 8-minute match. Jamie Noble, your Cruiserweight champion, along with Nydia, defeated Tajiri. I love Jamie Noble and Nydia as a tag. I thought they were great together.
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah. Your world heavyweight champion, Triple H, defeated Kane, your Intercontinental champion, in a unification match. Okay. So Triple H would go on to win both those titles in 16 minutes. I'm sure the Triple H haters loved him having another title. You know, I never understood the knock on Triple H of, oh, he never lets anyone go over. And I don't know, man. I mean, he was a big star. He certainly won more matches than he lost. But two things. Number one is, I don't think that if he wasn't dating Stephanie, anyone would have ever said anything. So I just thought he got kind of a bad rap. Like it wasn't like the guy never was willing to do a job. And let's be honest, most stars, you know, are resistant to lose. There were times Austin didn't want to lose. Hogan didn't want to lose. Like, they're all that way. So who cares? Second of all, even if you think that's true, to me, he's more than made up for. He's done every job. I mean, he beat Sting. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, I mean, obviously did jobs for Brock. Undertaker.
Had 40-minute matches with some of these people.
Daniel Bryan, Batista. took an ass kicking from Ronda Rousey. Reigns beat him at a WrestleMania. Rollins beat him at a WrestleMania. I mean, so the guy hasn't won a match in a decade.
Well, and we got to remember too, like we're talking about this and we're going to get into a little bit more. This was in a lot of ways, Triple H, it, you know, other than like the click and getting shit on after that, like this was the infamous Katie Vick storyline and why that match took place between Triple H and Kane, which we'll talk about that like in depth another time, but like,
will we though?
Okay, well, you know, briefly, yeah, like there's just a horrible, horrible angle, and for him to come back from that after, you know, having sex with a mannequin dead body, like, you know, and we forget, and I'll talk about it a little bit more just in general, not just this, but like this, the build that we have for this match, but yeah, he's had a long career that's had a lot of, there's no like some fucked up shit in it, but has always bounced back, and hey, like look at him now, he's the game, you know, he's been around, so this one, but yeah, that was an odd one for
sure. And look, anyone that listens to this podcast knows that I'm a Hulk Hogan mark, I'm a Shawn Michaels mark, and I'm a Vince McMahon apologist. Like I just, you know, I love Vince.
Yeah,
okay,
both, yeah.
Okay, but here, I mean, think about this guy. He's directing a scene where either his son-in-law or soon-to-be son-in-law is banging a mannequin in what, the trunk of a car or something?
No, it was the funeral home.
The funeral home, yeah, it was a coffin.
They were in the casket. She was in the casket, yeah.
I mean, Vince Bischoff on his podcast a few weeks ago was just telling a story about how he, you know, him and Stephanie kissed. Vince is right behind the camera. Dear God, a kiss her stronger than that, pal. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm telling
Dude's
you,
there, crazy.
There's no one in this. There's no one on this planet that fascinates me more than Vince McMahon. I want the book. I want the movie. I want the tell-all interview. I've said it. You know, you do that. Remember, sometimes we'll do a question. We'll ask students that we're working with, hey, if you could have dinner with any person that's alive, who would it be? You know, like I love asking that question. My answer would be Vince McMahon. There's no one in this planet I would rather spend 2 hours with than Vince McMahon.
And we're going to hear story like long after. Well, I mean, he's going to outlive us. So unfortunately, like our children may one day hear the stories of, you know, how crazy Vince McMahon was because, yeah, the dude just never stops. It's nuts.
So then I gather that there was then a SmackDown Tag Team Championship title as well because we needed, you know, six titles on each brand even 20 years ago. God, isn't that crazy that this brand bullshit's been going on for 20 years?
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
It's hard to, we forget that. Like we do have almost like the institutional memory. It's hard to remember everything in wrestling. And that's why there's so many articles written about like things WWE wants you to forget. Most of them we've forgotten because like it's always something. Like we've been watching a television show, you and me, for the better part of 30 years, you know?
Jeff, like, if I had said to you at the beginning of this show, if I had said to you, hey, when did the brand split start? How many years ago was that? I don't know about you, but I probably would have just been like, you know, if you needed an immediate answer, I'd probably been like, oh, I don't know, 10, 12 years now, maybe? It's been like 20.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Like, man, crazy. That's crazy. Makes you feel old is what it makes you feel. So the end of this tag team tournament for these titles was Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle defeating Edge and Rey Mysterio. So weren't a lot of tag teams in the division. It was more of just let's pair up a bunch of singles. I'm sure it was a great match, though. I'll just tell you who was in this tournament. Brock Lesnar and Tajiri were a team. Edge and Mysterio, Billy and Chuck, Reverend Devon and Ron Simmons, Billy Kidman and John Cena. Didn't know they were a tag team. Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle, Los Guerreros, and then Mark Henry and Rikishi. So what a tag team tournament that was. Then we got, and I say this with all due respect, but this is the era, we got our buffer match of a 5-minute Trish Stratus women's championship match where she kept the title against Victoria. And then the reason we're here, your champion Brock Lesnar against The Undertaker, Hell in a Cell. This is going to be a great one. Jeff, that's all I got. You know, there's just so much stuff from a storyline standpoint to cover, so I want to get right to it. How did we get to this main event, this feud? I know they had multiple matches. Some of this is, you know, build stuff. Some of it's aftermath stuff, but I'm really curious about this one.
Yeah. So this one was interesting. So you got to start, you got to go back just a couple of months. It was actually SummerSlam. You had Brock beating The Rock to win the WWE title, becoming the youngest champ, all that. We've talked about that before. We've covered that. And so that's how Brock coming into this match, having the title and being what he is now. That summer as well, too, you had Undertaker. He actually had a ladder match against Jeff Hardy. We're going to say Jeff Hardy's name a little bit throughout this.
That was a great match. We actually may want to cover that one. That was a really good match.
Well, I had that one. Yeah, it was actually. And so, that one was a little bit of a back and forth there. And then you actually had The Rock losing the title. This was prior to SummerSlam. It was at Vengeance. Undertaker losing the title to The Rock at Vengeance. Kurt Angle was involved in that match too. And so fast forward a little bit to that, the end of the summer, really August, early September, getting the brand split, brand extension, whatever you want to call it. And people kind of moving back and forth. So you had the Undertaker going to SmackDown, and then he was there actually for the better part. And this is the thing, like you said, you forget how long it was. He was there for almost 10 years on SmackDown. Weird to think, he wasn't on Raw, but.
Oh yeah.
And so he was there. It was actually 2011 when they kind of merged again. It was a whole thing. And so he actually beat, it was Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle to become the number one contender and challenge Brock at Unforgiven. That match, and that was the pay-per-view just before this one, No Mercy, that match actually ended in a double DQ. And so you then had Brock and The Undertaker really being the main rivalry at that point. So really about, a month prior to this match at No Mercy is when the guys really kind of started, I say going at each other and the kind of build starting, but, kind of have to get there. So, had your double DQ. It was actually like, it was because the ref got attacked, and then it was just nutty. It was a funny finish, but that's how it goes. So you have the Undertaker though, beating Matt Hardy, who had actually interfered in that match as well too. And then you had Lesnar attacking the Undertaker. It was just your normal back and forth kind of guys going at it and things like that. You then had Jeff Hardy getting involved too. So it's just, playing up with the Hardys and things like that, and kind of how, they were having actual matches. Weird to think of Brock wrestling on TV, but he was on the weekly show and they were having matches and the Hardys getting involved and that just kind of happening. So, but after they kind of had their back and forth, it was actually Stephanie McMahon, who at the time was the SmackDown general manager, ordering Paul Heyman, who of course was with, his advocate, if you will, manager. There's a long haired Paul Heyman too.
Jeff, I'm just laughing. These are all the same people that are still around. Like, yeah, this that's 20 years ago. Steph's SmackDown GM. What, wasn't she Raw GM a few years ago?
Well, she just did the draft.
Yeah. Heyman is still with Lesnar. Now he's with Raw. Got 20 years, which is crazy. Right.
Just nuts. And so, but her making the call that this match is going to be a Hell in a Cell match. And so at No Mercy, again, having this Hell in a Cell as the main event. So here's where the story kind of gets a little weird. And I had forgotten about part of this until I started reading up on it again. But, we had talked about the Katie Vick kind of takes the cake as the weirdest of the weird. This is one though, that you actually had, it was Heyman and Lesnar bringing a woman, to the arena, and people weren't sure who they were. Really, they were setting up a, kind of love triangle or, kind of scandalous story of, what the Undertaker had been involved or, who he had been involved with. And so her name was Tracy. And so, interesting. So you have Tracy saying that, she accused the Undertaker, of sleeping with her, and that, she had been involved. Now, also at the same time too, you had the Undertaker, who was at the time his second wife, who was, kind of involved in the story as well too. And this is his actual wife, Sarah, that she was pregnant, and, his actual wife. And so you kind of had this story going on. And so Taker, again, using real life and mimicking it, like how Vince kind of likes to do, or, her getting involved as well too in the storyline. And so this was really just that was on the October 10th version or date of SmackDown. October 20th is when this event occurred. And so you really, it's a very quick build. It's a very odd build. And kind of what they were doing. So, of course, Undertaker denies that he ever met Tracy before and that he never had an affair with her. But, you know, of course, got slapped in the face doing all that. You then have, you know, as the promos kind of played out, you had Undertaker saying that, and then he had kind of switched. And yes, he did know her, but it was prior to her and it was the whole thing. And so it was just very weird. You know, I say weird, but it was actually a normal storyline for the time. And kind of what they were doing. And so, you know, how they were involved and things like that. And it just, that was the wrestling we were watching. And so, you know, who cared? It was, you know, the Jerry Springer era and things like that. And it was crazy. And that's what we went with. And so another interesting little part of this is Undertaker actually had broken his hand. This was a legitimate injury. And so he was actually in a cast for this match. And so they actually made that a little bit, you know, part of the storyline was that he couldn't use the cast. You actually had Undertaker attacking Lesnar and things like that. And so, you know, just, you know, little things that, you know, using those, and we talk about it on the show a lot, like Vince likes to use those kind of real world things. And so that's what we were doing here and kind of getting at this. So you had, I'd say, a fairly quick build after, you know, really summer until October of, you know, these guys having a little bit of back and forth, but it really ramped up in about the 30 days. You know, they had the Vengeance pay-per-view and then this. So maybe 45 days prior to everything happening is when this really started ramping up. And so, so you've got the champ, Brock Lesnar, versus the challenger, Big Evil, who at the time, that was the persona he was going with. And so if you, you know, we talk about that and we're kind of, you know, watching the match and kind of what's happening. And we get this Hell in the Cell match at No Mercy. And so kind of fun build, interesting build. It kind of, you know, shows the sign of the times with kind of what they were doing. But that's where we're at, man. Thoughts?
I have a lot, but we're going to save them for the match because this one's about almost 30 minutes. So I've got a lot of talking points for us. And I feel like there's a lot we're going to want to talk about related to the match too. It's a pretty good one. So great recap as always. I'm pumped to cover this one.
Let's do it.
All right. So if you want to watch with us, WWE Network, No Mercy 2002, Big Evil. God, I can't even say it. Big Evil is coming to the ring. I mean, he's still going by The Undertaker. It's not like he changed his name to like first name Big, last name Evil, but still just odd. And then he had like the red hair and the reds. So there's just a lot of red going on. I don't know. All right. So Big Evil's coming to the ring. We're at 2 hours, 16 minutes of No Mercy 2002. 2 hours, 16 minutes. No Mercy 2002. Jeff, it's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
You hear his music, man. Go Google this music. It is brutal. You know, The Undertaker's this like badass mythical character, and he has this goofy ass Big Evil. Jeff, I got to tell you, I just the Big Evil thing, man. I don't like it. Not because I'm only a traditionalist. I'm fine with The Undertaker's various looks. I thought the American Badass was a very smart thing to do to, you know, kind of give him some longevity in his career. I just didn't really understand the nickname Big Evil. I didn't like the red. I don't know. Just wasn't a fan. What about you? Thoughts on Big Evil?
Yeah, you know, it's just interesting. Like you said, I hated the kind of not necessarily fully pulling the trigger at the end when they did the graveyard boneyard match, whatever it was. You know, cause there was like, what is he doing? But I did, you know, after kind of watching The Last Ride and understanding, like he was kind of putting all of his characters together to make this just like, you know, it was the Undertaker, Mark Calloway, whatever you wanted to talk about it. And that was, and so, yeah, I think it's just like this, you know, maybe it was like the early incarnation of kind of what he wanted to be. But yeah, it just, like you said, the music alone, like just not there. But it is like, you know, I remember Stone Cold saying, like, if you're going to survive in this business, you need to reinvent yourself. And it's kind of funny coming from him because,
The exact same thing he did when he was wrestling in 98.
Right. Exactly.
He still comes to the ring to the same. Yeah. Hey, look, it's interesting because some people have had to reinvent themselves, but it's not a fast and hard rule. It's not like, oh, you know, Brock Lesnar's way different. No, he wears different tights. He maybe wrestles a slightly different style, but I mean, Lesnar's basically been Lesnar for 20 years, and I think he's made a few bucks in the industry. You know, Shawn Michaels, how much did he change over the course of his career? I mean, Heartbreak Kid, kind of the same, and DX a little bit of an edge, but I don't know. It's just funny, but Taker did a good job. I mean, I applaud him for reinventing himself. I just, this big evil kind of portion. And that's why, you bring up a great point of the last ride. That was basically his thing was like, hey, this last little, if it is the last thing that he did with AJ was basically a compilation, if you will, of all the different characters that he's had. Now, something that was in the news a few weeks ago, it looks like we're getting WrestleMania in Tampa again?
I don't know. Like, as I saw two of the reports, like they extended the Thunderdome contract, because Florida's kind of reopened, COVID or he who must not be named in WWE COVID, who knows what's actually going to happen with that. But I got a feeling Vince is, he's ever the businessman. Like, we'll just have to kind of wait and see how this plays out. But yeah, I'm reading the same kind of stuff that you are too, of who knows, and they're fighting California too. And, you and I in a shoot job, like the contractual, like who broke up with who type thing. And so they're fighting that. So yeah, it's going to be messy and it's going to be stupid. Yeah.
Yeah. I my guess, and again, who knows what'll happen. My guess is there are a handful of venues that you could have WrestleMania and have a decent or completely full crowd. Outdoors in Florida will work. California, no chance, right? So you can go down the list. There's probably not a ton of places that you could do it. I don't think New York or New Jersey would allow it. So, the point being is that it probably needs to be open air, and it probably needs to be in one of the states that are allowing NFL crowds and, are a little bit more receptive to that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens for sure. I mean, I've always thought, man, if we could get a big crowd for an outdoor Royal Rumble and kind of kick off 2021, and that would be really cool. Like, how cool would it be if they, maybe you do an outdoor baseball stadium, is there. And I don't, I'm trying to think, I'll tell you one that would be really good is the new one in Texas where they're having the ALCS right now, I believe, but they're having, or they were, I can't remember who played where, what they did, but the point is that they, that'd be cool. So you do you do a baseball stadium for Royal Rumble and draw a big crowd. And then, my pipe dream would be, dude, either you bring back Edge and he goes after Orton, or maybe CM Punk, or maybe you do like a Brock Lesnar. I don't know, but it'd be pretty cool. So anyways, looks like we're hopefully going to start getting some outdoor shows next year. I don't know your feelings on this, but I'd like for us to go to WrestleMania in Tampa if we can, and that's where they have it.
Yeah, and it's so hard. It's so hard. You just never know. And like, you're in one place and I'm in another, and the state rules, and who knows what's going to happen and things like that. It's hard to say.
So Lesnar is gushing blood. Clearly did a blade job. Just gushing early on here, just a few minutes into the match.
And you got Undertaker's been using the cast to kind of whack Brock as well too. And so, yep. Interesting. Yeah, no. And I think, cause I was just recently, I went to the, our minor league baseball stadium here. Cause I'm in Indiana and
you went to like a movie or something, right?
Yeah. And they did a movie on the screen. And so I know you're all kind of spaced. And then they also use like part of the field. They had like pods and things like that people could buy and kind of hang out. And so, yeah, I think there's options there. And I think Vince is going to do it as soon as he can, because that's just how Vince is. And so
sure.
And it's weird too, because I kind of thinking of the calendar, like we're actually closer to the next WrestleMania than we are the previous WrestleMania.
Good point.
And so we're on the road, you know, we're halfway there. It's kind of weird to think about. And so granted, we've got, you know, Survivor Series and, you know, there's other things to happen, you know, Royal Rumble, like you said, and who knows what we're going to get between now and then, and more takeovers and things like that. But yeah, it's just, we can only hope, you know, who knows what the world's, we gotta get through the, it sucks.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it. So you got, go ahead.
Well, I got it. Were you going to talk about the match, or did you have another talking point?
I was going to talk about the match, because
Go ahead.
They have the, because the last time we did a Hell in a Cell match, because it was the first one, they didn't have it. They've got the foot holes cut out of the ring on, or out of the fencing on this one. And so you kind of see if they decide to kind of do that stuff and make it a little easier for the guys. And that's what's to say. And this match, they've just been kind of tossing each other around on the outside. There has been very little action inside the ring at this point.
Yeah. God, Lesnar is just gushing. Do you remember, did they did a Hell in a Cell. So they did a trilogy in, you know, obviously more recently, I forget what year that would have been, 2016 maybe, but they did the WrestleMania match that Taker lost. Then they did the SummerSlam match where Taker won like by submission because Lesnar passed out. And that third match, was that Hell in a Cell?
I forget.
I think it was, and I think that's where Lesnar won, but I can't remember. I'm curious about that. So I was trying to figure out when they ruined the Hell in a Cell. And what I mean by ruined is they just started doing too damn many of them. Let me tell you what's interesting, Jeff. They ruined it right away. Okay. Well, I'll tell you why I say that. So we had the bad blood one, right? Taker. Wow. Taker walking the ropes. Is he going to do a leg drop? Ugh. That was kind of a botched move. Yeah. So, all right. So they do the first ever match, bad blood, October of 97. Okay. Great. Now, you don't go back and do another one immediately. They didn't. But the next one was obviously King of the Ring, Undertaker, Mankind. But 2 weeks prior to that, they did like kind of one with Austin and Undertaker versus Mankind and Kane that like went to a no contest. I don't know if they even ever started the match. So we won't count that, but it's like they should have never even had it there. Like it should only be on pay-per-view, okay? So then we get Mankind and Kane on August of 98. So you basically had three of them in the summer of 98. Then March of 99, you got that shitty WrestleMania one with Taker and Boss Man, all right? Which was stupid. Why would you have had those two? You knew the match was going to suck. Horrible. One of the worst ones ever. Then they bring it out a few months or in the fall, September of 99, for that stupid Al Snow Big Boss Man Kettle in a cage match.
Yes.
Okay? That sucked. So you basically overplayed it and ruined it then. Then we got the good one of Triple H, Mick Foley, and what was billed as Foley's retirement match. Oh, Heyman with a blade job too.
Yep.
Don't see that very often, just getting the shit kicked out of him outside the ring.
Ooh. He's got... So Taker was holding Heyman with his tie through the cage. Brock came in, missed, and hit Heyman. Taker's been dominating this match. They're both now Brock and Heyman just bleeding like crazy. Yeah, and we've had
So February 2000, we get a little back on track. We have Triple H and Mick Foley. That was a good match. Then December of 2000, so like 11 months later, 10 months later, that was that six-pack or six-man match that had Angle, Triple H, Austin, Rock, Undertaker, Rikishi. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. We did not get one in 2001. Good. Take a break. 2002, May, we get Triple H, Chris Jericho, bloody match, good match, okay?
Judgment Day or something
like that? Yes, Judgment Day, all right? Yeah. Then October of 2002, the match that we're covering, all right? We can keep going through, and then they did a good job. So they overdid it, then they stopped. Then we got one in 2003, which was Triple H and Kevin Nash. Yeah, okay. 2004, we got one, which is Triple H, Shawn Michaels, 50-minute battle. Dude, we need to watch that one. That was a great match. And then we had two in 2005, one in 2006, one in 2007, one in 2008. Here we go. We got three in 2009, two in 2010, three in 2011, two in 12, two in 13.
Was it 2010 when the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view started? 2009, 2010, something
no,
like that?
No, I am seeing... 2009.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking 9 or 10 because, yeah. Like, and that's when, too, you had the, like, the standalone pay-per-view of the Hell in the Cell. And all I can think is, like, because there have been matches since then, and you and I make the comment a lot, and we hear from a lot of different people, like, how it's utilized, and this might have been, you know, you were getting, like, how the match is utilized is not always great. Like, it doesn't always make sense for why it's a Hell in a Cell match.
Okay, so yes, that's the problem, is that you've now pigeoned yourself into, we do Hell in a Cell in October. Well, if there's a killer feud in October, great.
Yeah.
But the only way it works, and then even then you know it's coming. So it's like, you know that, oh, hey, this feud's going on at SummerSlam. Well, it's probably going to culminate in a Hell in a Cell match. I just like when once a year, the only way to settle this feud is through, you know, Hell in a Cell.
Well, and that was, I remember it was 2017. I didn't go, but Hell in a Cell was in Detroit. And I think that's when they had like the Red Cell as well too. And so that was a thing. And so I remember it was Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon had a match that year. And so, yeah, I think like you said, and they've been doing more like women's matches in them as well too. I remember there was the botch. What was it? I forget if it was truly a Hell in a Cell or what it was, like the botch Sasha Charlotte table spot.
Yes.
And things like that. Yeah. And so they had like those kind of things. And so yeah, you know, and that was, yeah, what, 16, something like that. But yeah, you know, and like this is another one where it's just like, at least this kind of makes sense, like why they're doing this is because they had the, you know, the DQ match. There has been a lot of outside interference with the Hardys, and so doing it this way makes sense, like just from a storyline standpoint. But so many times, you know, I can already hear the line from Michael Cole, like, it can't be contained. Like, it's like, you know, this feud can't be, it's just like, what the heck, you know? And so many times, like, yes, it can, it doesn't need a Hell in a Cell. And there was something special about, like, and you and I in recent years, it's always funny when you hear, like, you know, we'll get the occasional, like, and there, it definitely hasn't been as much anymore, but the occasional, like, oh, like there's a cage over the ring. And so we're getting, or, you know, hanging from the rafters, like, and they've got it all, like, you know, roped, or I said rope, but like kind of sheeted off. But, you know, and that kind of stuff, it just doesn't happen anymore because we have a pay-per-view that happens and, like, that's it. Like, we know that there's going to be Hell in a Cell every year, whether it's warranted or not. So we've now spent probably about the better part of about 5 minutes of Brock trying to rip off the Undertaker's cast.
You know, and I think it's really well done. I mean, I'm like sitting here like cringing. I'm like, oh, you know, I mean, it's well done. I like it.
And so, and he was dealing with a true, like, non-kayfabe, like, broken hand at this point. And so, kind of dealing with that, but, you know, doing the job and doing the work. Brock has still been bleeding, and now you've got Brock kind of working there. We're back in the ring finally, too. We've been going at this for about 10, 15 minutes, I feel like, and we're finally back in the ring. You got any other you said you had something else to talk about too.
What I got a bunch of stuff to talk about. So right. It was funny when you're talking about Brock wrestling on TV. It's just, yeah, I forget that he no longer does that. Now, here's my question. Since Brock has been back, okay, and of course when I say back, I mean, hell, he's been back for a decade now. Is the only TV match he had is when he squashed Kofi?
I don't know. It's always
on the Fox debut.
Yeah, there was that, and I think that was and so I'm kind of pulling up. Yeah, so Brock Lesnar's match with Kofi Kingston is his first on WWE TV in 15 years. And so it would have been...
So it was, and he obviously hasn't wrestled since.
So 3-2-2004 would have been the last time that he had a match. I'll try and look up real quick. what that match was.
Did you see Lesnar right now, like on top of the ropes and wow.
He's going for Hurricanrana. What's
the hell is he? Yeah, looks like it. Oh, low blow. Oh,
so it was, a SmackDown win over Hardcore Holly. That was his last TV match prior to when he wrestled Kofi on TV, which that's crazy to think about. So now you got Taker walking the ropes a little bit. It's a low, low cell ceiling there. You're not used to
that. Yeah, it really is, right? They remember it got higher in recent years, right?
There's a whole lot more. Is it a war? You know how they construct these things? Is it a war game cell? Is it a, you know, just a steel cage match? Like, who knows anymore? Like how they're building these. And we got the Punjab prison, like, you know, just you can see it with the angle they got the camera right now. The cuts and the fencing were extremely clear on that one. And so both guys, like, there hasn't, like, true wrestling. I mean, they're really just kicking the crap out of each other. They're not wrestling at all. There was a suplex or two at the start, but that was about all we got. There was not a whole lot since. Heyman, you know, still bleeding as well too. Undertaker looking wobbly and weird. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he does. Oh, he looks like kind of out of it.
Is his hair red?
That's why I said it's like his like red tights and his hair's like naturally like kind of red.
Yep.
Oh.
Oh, big boot. As Brock is standing on the outside, kind of hits Taker and he goes, or hits Brock and he goes flying. Yeah, so this is one too. I guess too, like where we're at right now, like what happens with Brock? Like
what do you mean?
Like in the current, like, you know, we've got 20 years of Brock that we're, you know, we're about to hit. Like, does he win the title again? Do we get another long run with Brock?
I mean, if you're asking me, has Brock won his last world title? Of course not. I mean, Goldberg's won it like two or three times and he's been retired. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to get more Brock. Yeah, you know. Oh, you know. What I was thinking too. I wonder if Goldberg comes back for a match with Reigns. I could see that being like a Royal Rumble match, and Goldberg doing the job he was supposed to do at WrestleMania.
And that would, you know, and yeah, I'm sure. And that's one of those you wonder is like, you know, some of these guys, and after especially like the Taker last ride, like, you know, are they? You know, did some ears perk up, you know, that, and that's the biggest thing. And so, and yeah, because really, like, we haven't seen Brock actually since WrestleMania, right?
No, not at all.
He lost to Drew.
Yeah, not at all.
You know, and there's the rumors too. He's not under contract anymore. I know we always hear about, like, is he in the testing pool for, UFC and things like that.
I mean, Dana White just recently was like, nah, if he's not doing it, you know, so I take him at his words. I don't think he's a bullshitter or a showman. I think he's just, you know, look, the guy's not doing it.
Well, you think about it too. Even if he signs, what, another 2-year deal for, you figure what, $1 million a year, easy. Like, you know, he's pulling that kind of, you know, for with WWE and to work the schedule he works, like, shit, I'd do that. Oh, and so we got a huge blade job from Taker. Wow. That is a crimson mask.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. That
Holy
is a
shit.
That is a deep cut. Goodness. And so it makes sense because he was laying on the ground. So Brock's been going at him with the steel steps. You've got Taker.
Oh
man, barely got his hand up there. Holy shit. And Brock just tossed the steps across the fucking ring.
Oh, look at that blood.
Both guys, like, hell of a blade job. Jesus. Oh boy, that is a crimson mask Taker right there. That is, you just don't see that anymore. That's for sure. Well, it's something I have not brought up with this storyline too. And it kind of speaks to what we've seen recently of during the kind of, you know, the dealings with Tracy and kind of them, you know, him going after, you know, the kind of affair that Taker had, they were actually calling him Mark, which I had totally forgotten that.
Yeah, me too.
it was one of those where, because it was such a big deal when, and it worked so well when AJ was doing it in their feud of, you know, calling him Mark and using Michelle and things like that. Like, and even the last ride, like Michelle saying, like, she was legit pissed at some of that stuff too. You know, she was getting worked, which is, yeah, that's how you know it's working, is when, you know, the wrestler's getting worked. And kind of dealing with that. But what are your thoughts, like, totally kind of ripping away that kind of facade, especially in situations like that? Like, do you, you know, within the social media age, like, you know, you're going to get that sometimes, but are you, you like that? Do you think like that much real world crossover makes sense when their character is such a big part of them?
I think you do it sparingly and you do it with the right people for the right feud. The stuff that AJ did with Taker was phenomenal. It was so good. Mm-hmm. But do I need it all the time? No, I don't need to be beat over the head that his name's Mark Calloway. It's not the Undertaker. But again, I think every once in a while you can do it. I mean, can you call Hulk Hogan Terry? Yeah, but you better do it one time in his career at the right moment in the right feud, and it better be a major, major personal issue.
Has it ever happened with
Hogan?
Him?
Yeah. No, I don't. I'm not that I can think of.
Like, right. And like, that's where you're dead on.
Again, you could be like, hey, Terry, you're past your prime. You know, Hulk Hogan's dead. Okay, that works, man. Like, hey, Superman's dead. Like, I'm okay with it. But again, you do it once. So, you know, I don't need the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, hey, this shit's fake. But if you're going to make it a deep personal issue, again, I think Taker and AJ, man, it was so well done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and everybody, you know, Roman kind of, you know, with his, you know, when his cancer came back and like, I'm Joe, like, you know, things like that, you know, that that's on a different level. Like that's, you know, because of what happened. But yeah,
well, I'd argue that that should be his ring name and it shouldn't be some goofy name, Roman Reigns. But Vince wants to own all the copyrights and blah, blah, blah. I just think it comes across so much faker when these guys have, you know, fake names. Like, I'm okay with like characters. I'm okay with somebody being like, hey, like, Adam Copeland goes by Edge. That's cool. That's fine. But like, right, you know what his name is. Like, I just think that I like things being presented, you know, who's Baron Corbin. Well, the guy doesn't exist. His name's different. He played in the NFL and, you know, why not do that? Why not take his personality? I mean, Baron Corbin in real life with like a real name and hey, this guy played in the NFL. Oh yeah. It's horrible.
Sorry. Yep.
No. But that, anyways, I've explained that before, but I'd like some more realism. You don't need fake names. So, you F5.
Yeah. Faked out. So Taker was, my reaction was,
I want to get a audience back here.
You had a stream of blood coming from Taker. And kind of how he looked. Yeah, just crazy.
So what's the deal with all the Brock hate? Why do people not like Brock?
I think it was the booking, plain and simple. Like, and it came in spurts with me too. Like, there were times where I think my kind of dislike came from give it to somebody else. Like, there are
the other title. People.
Yes. And so I think that you can have Brock have feuds. It's like The Fiend. They don't need the title.
Well, that's, I agree there.
Like, that was, I think that was almost universally, and he hasn't had it. Like, it was almost universal, not to, you know, be funny there with the universal title, but like, if they pulled the trigger too quick and he just didn't need it. And that character now, it's like, I dislike that character because it just, I feel burned by it. And so, yeah, I think this kind of, it's just, you know, weird. And that's, yeah, I don't know.
See the reason I didn't mind Brock with the title is it was just so refreshing to go, hey, you know, it's just one, it was one less title that I had to see every week on TV. Okay. So I like the idea of, hey, you get a championship match every other pay-per-view. Okay, good. Just give me a break. I don't need two world titles, two versions of an Intercontinental title, two tag team titles, two women's titles. the 24/7 bullshit, right? Like, I don't need all that. So it was just refreshing for me. I'm like, hey, this title, I only have to see defended 6 times a year. Great.
Yeah. No, and I think that there's that flip side to it of adding a little bit of mystique to it, and he comes back and defends it and kind of whatever it might be.
Yeah. Well, and defeating Kofi, I mean, you know, I know people are disappointed by that, but hey, Fox just paid $1 billion for the TV rights. Guess what? You need a big star to be champ, okay? Like, it needs to be Brock Lesnar. It has to be.
And I get the argument people wanted it to be Kofi, but Vince wasn't going to do that.
Fox wasn't going to do it.
And so it's almost crazy, like, how much Taker has been he's bleeding all over Brock. He's like,
look at that.
It was a deep blood job or deep blade job. There is blood all over the ring.
One of the worst blade jobs I can ever remember.
Right.
And like, this is up there with that, like, JBL one against Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, and this is, you know, we say a bad bleed. Like, he looked like, you don't wonder, he has lost a lot of blood, and he's covered Brock in it as well, too. It just looks like, yeah, he's a guy that's been losing all kind of blood. Like, just so crazy.
So I pulled up a Bleacher Report top 10 Hell in a Cell match ever list. Their number one is Batista Triple H Vengeance 2005. So that's one we may want to cover.
That's one we want to cover. Yeah, for sure.
Going for the tombstone.
Brock powers him out, though. Oh, my God. F5. Yep.
It's got to be it.
It's got to be. Yep, that's it. Okay.
Wow.
He just pressed the Undertaker to get him from, like, on his shoulder to, or, like, holding him to, like, up on his shoulder for an F5. That was crazy. And just a blood-soaked ring. And Brock getting out of Dodge. There you go.
Wow.
What a checking him. Interesting. Okay. All right.
All right.
Get into some aftermath. You ready?
I am ready. It is time for the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right. Instant thoughts.
More intense than I expected it to be.
I would agree with that.
Like, I think, I don't know if I guess I went in expecting a wrestling match, and it was more just them kicking the crap out of each other for 20, 30 minutes, like, which I'm okay with that. Like, I enjoyed, like, watching it. The blood, at a certain point, I was like, okay, that was the blood was a little much, but at the same time, like, that's what it was. Like, it made sense getting into my, like, it made sense that it was in a Hell in a Cell because of what we saw in the ring, though. Because they just kicked the crap out of each other and didn't wrestle a match. So it makes more sense to me. How about you?
I think your assessment's accurate. I love it. And we're watching the post-match here. I don't know if you still have it on, but Lesnar just scaled the cage and he's holding up the title on top of the cage.
Yep.
I which was that iconic end to this pay-per-view. It was pretty cool.
Walking around with it. Yep.
I liked it. I thought it was really good. So what happens with these guys following this match?
Yeah, and so this one, of course, you have Brock now, still the champ, standing on top of the cell, raising the belt above his head, and him beating the Undertaker. Undertaker looking up, too. Again, you got to remember, too, this was, we say, young Brock. This was, he was, you know, a young champ Brock. You know, and so really, when you think, like, Undertaker doing the job and putting him over. And so right out of the gate, though, a couple of days after this, one, you had Brock starting a feud with the Big Show, actually, and right out of the gate, a challenger to Survivor Series, which was the next pay-per-view. Big Show coming over to SmackDown as one of the, you know, draft acquisitions. And so them starting right away. You also, though, had Undertaker kind of putting the bow on it and, you know, coming out, cutting a promo for Brock and the match that they had and kind of how good it was. But you had, it was actually Big Show attacking the Undertaker at this, which actually took him off of TV after a little bit. We'll come back to that, actually, because they ended up Undertaker left for a little bit after this. And so this was, you know, October-ish. Came back actually at the Royal Rumble and immediately went back into a feud with the Big Show, beating him. Actually, it was in No Way Out, and beating him by submission. Actually.
So was that the WrestleMania where it was like him versus Big Show and Albert?
I think, yeah.
Oh, ugh.
So... wins a win, I guess. Yeah. And so, yeah, Brock though, again, you had him and Heyman kind of still doing what they do. Brock taking on the Big Show at Survivor Series, actually. You know, kind of how it played out though was Big Show actually beat Brock though, because, Heyman betrayed Lesnar and, teamed with the Big Show at that point. So, always, you know, I guess a good sign when the Undertaker puts you over, but then you go and feud with the Big Show, which, you know, it's fine, I guess. But, you know, it kind of losing that match kind of deflate it a little bit too. So he didn't even really have the belt for 6 months, and kind of dealing with that. But, that was really it. You know, there's some things happen after this, but, you know, we'll save that for another day. But, you know, the feud though between the Undertaker and Brock kind of ending fairly quick.
You know, you forget how many just shitty things that Big Show was part of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's almost crazy. And like, you know, I personally have not always been like, I feel nothing towards him. Like,
I know.
Yes. Like, you
I'm sure
know,
he's a hell of a nice guy, you know, like,
yeah, he had a short-lived Netflix TV show, like, you know.
Oh yeah, that got canceled.
Yep, that got canceled right away, which I get it, like, you know, it's just not what it is. And so I don't know, but yeah, just weird. But yeah, so the reviews, kind of what we had here, kind of what everybody was saying, it's kind of interesting, actually, I thought. So Taker was actually number 2 on the PWI. Brock was 17, but he was also voted the most improved wrestler this year. I get that, like winning the beating the Rock, winning the title, everything he did, like going over with the Undertaker, like makes sense to me why he got that. So starting with the PW Torch, though, Wade gave this match a 3.5 stars. He said the Hell in a Cell was as good as you could expect from those two. Not an all-time classic, but a main event worthy performance. Some of the kind of beat writers on this one: many people have piled on Undertaker's reluctance to suffer clean losses. When the dead man does lose in a one-on-one situation like he did last night, it is noteworthy. The skit with Undertaker getting his hand shot full of painkillers and his subsequent no selling of a broken hand actually made a little bit of sense. And the closing sequence with Lesnar throwing Undertaker around like a sack of potatoes is going to make all the Lesnar highlight packages during this reign. The first half of the match dragged, but the crowd got into it once they figured out no one was jumping off of the roof. It's funny how at that point, like, that's the standard and that's the benchmark. Like,
yeah, you know, there were years of that where it was like, wait, when are they going to break out of the cage? And I remember there was, this might have been the first one, or it was one of them where it was, oh wait, so I guess we're not going to get this every single time, right? Where they jump off the cage.
You'd almost be disappointed if Shane didn't get thrown off of something. Like, you know, you got to get your money's worth. And so speaking of the Blade Job, another one of the beat writers on this one, the key to the first half of the match was clearly the well-established storyline of Undertaker's broken hand. The second half of the match was all about Taker's Blade Job. And while that type of Blade Job can be frightening in its own way, I'd much rather see a veteran like Taker, who's bladed hundreds of times before, perform a deep blade job than the insane bumps that Foley did. I'm going to talk about this in my score, but I thought there was interesting. That's just an interesting idea to me of kind of, you know, doing that stuff. So Meltzer, though, this was a 4-star match. In hindsight, not only did an Undertaker do the right thing, but he did the best thing. For all the complaints about the non-finish last month, which that was the DQ, for the non-finish last month, a few things have to be understood. As long as the company is doing this brand extension, has its mindset on only a few wrestlers of being main event caliber and not doing long-term planning, there are only a small number of pay-per-view caliber main events. Knowing that, you can't blow through all of them in 1 month programs. So kind of, you know, his take, he was kind of speaking to the larger kind of piece of this. I'm actually going to give this one like an 8. It was different. Like, you know, even though I went in kind of looking for a wrestling match, I was actually glad it wasn't. And so like we've talked about, like the Hell in a Cell made sense. It was kind of crazy. The reason I included that one quote, because I thought it was like, it was an interesting perspective. It's not one that we always kind of get when we're kind of reading these and kind of looking through this and, you know, kind of seeing what some of the hot takes are and things like that. And this, you know, at the time it would have been a hot take of, you know, would you rather, you know, while we're so used to, you know, the big bumps that, you know, came associated with Hell in a Cell at the time and kind of what was happening, like, what would you rather, like, it's like a really weird, would you rather in wrestling of, would you rather have a veteran do something that, like, and that's like, even though it's a blade job, be very, very good at, you know, to tell a story, in my mind, like tell a story and be a part of the match, or would you rather just have some giant spot? For me, like, I prefer the storytelling of it. I make no secret of, you know, when we do this and I kind of give scores, like, I think the story, you know, so many times it should be, you can tell a story in the ring. I think the Okada Omega trilogy, you know, is the best in regards to that sense. You know, in the many years that they had matches over, or the, you know, the trilogy really more than anything, but I was, you know, if you really hadn't knowing like, okay, they had a match before and it was double DQ. And even if you really didn't know that, like then getting this match and being like, wow, these guys are like, you can kind of infer from what was happening, like, oh, he's got this cast. He's trying to rip it off. That makes sense. Like, oh, like he's, you know, like he's kicking the crap out of him with these steel steps and now he's bleeding. Like it makes sense. And so, while, you know, we have to, that there's that veil of, you know, there, you know, suspension of disbelief that we all have to have when we're watching wrestling, at the same time, like I enjoyed this because it told a good story to me even in the ring. And then that's it. We moved on. Like it made a lot of sense. And like, we, you know, we look at all the pieces of it when giving our score, that the aftermath made, like, that was it. Like that was the end of the feud. It's time to move on. And for me, that made sense. And so, it might be high for some people because they want wrestling and this wasn't, but, yeah, I'm going to go with an 8. I got some firm beliefs in this one. I'm going to stick with it. How about you?
You know, I don't think I liked it as much as you. They did the brawl. There were, you know, a couple spots here and there. Ton of blood. The build wasn't anything remarkable. I mean, I don't think they did the best job with Brock after, you know, it was kind of the way he debuted and the way they brought him in, I thought was excellent. I thought the Brock Rock was, you know, one of the better things that WWE's done in a long time. I mean, really over the past 20 years. I loved it. I thought the, you know, kind of these two titanic legitimate athletes going at it, you know, Rock kind of passing the torch in some way. I love that. I just didn't think they did much with him later on in the year. It was kind of odd. And then they got the Big Show involved and I don't know. I just think they needed better quality opponents for him. So I think that weighs heavily on my score, but it was a good match. It was entertaining. It was worthy of a main event of this show. I'll give it a 7.
Okay. That's a good score.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it.
Hey, it's still a decent score. Like I said, I was sports entertained. And some around here, you can't complain about that sometimes. So that's good stuff. So,
hey, man, there's not a lot of sports entertainment going on this year. I mean, shit, everything they do just sucks. So
Everything's done. Hockey, basketball, baseball, like it's all done. So, you know, what are we going to do with ourselves now? So,
dude, my hope is that Rumble is in an outdoor baseball stadium, WrestleMania is outdoors, and they just throw the kitchen sink at this thing. And, you know, we get Edge back. Maybe we get a CM Punk. Maybe you get a Lesnar back in the fold. Pipe dream is, you know, you get the Rock Roman Reigns match at WrestleMania. So it, in some weird way, it could turn out that WrestleMania ends up being awesome. Who the hell knows?
Yeah. It'll happen eventually. So who knows if it's when, and hopefully it's within, not in an empty arena, but we'll see.
So. Well, no, and it's interesting too, because it's, you know, since there hasn't been crowds, I feel like there's a lot of like lingering guys that, I mean, you know, and again, let me just fantasy book this for a second, but it's like, you know, you've heard that Sting maybe has a match left in him. You think Undertaker will retire in front of a crowd. Lesnar's still got a contract. Goldberg's still got a match or two a year guarantee that he told for Vince. You know, Rock reigns. I mean, if Rock's going to do it, it's going to be sooner than later, right? I mean, just from an age standpoint, Reigns as a heel's really interesting. You know, I saw something the other day. They're like, hey, what if you got like a Daniel Bryan Shinsuke match? That could be really interesting. So I don't know. I'm like intrigued about what could be, but I'm certainly not intrigued about what currently is.
Yeah, no, and that's a good way. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, right? So yeah. Who knows? But well, right. I'll send everybody home happy. You know, that's what we like to do. And so at Payoff Pod, you know where to find us. You know, at Payoff Tom, at Payoff Jeff, all that social media. Make sure to go back, check out those archives as well too. We're posting every week and reminding everybody what we've done. Doing this for over a year, and so we've got lots of matches with, we had some guests and things like that. Barry Horowitz, Vicky Guerrero. Go back, check all that good stuff out.
Oh, so, yeah.
Tom, send us home, my friend.
Well, another great episode. As always, thank you for joining us on The Payoff.